Thanks for listening to your Triple M Show podcast. This is a special Triple M's No Talk Day podcast. Your regular Triple M Show will be back soon. Meantime, make sure you follow it on socials and the listener app for all the latest. Triple M's No Talk Day is Monday, July 1, a day where we take all our shows, news, traffic reports and commercials off the air and highlight the importance for men to prioritise their mental well-being. That's why you're receiving this podcast today, the third in the series of three, where Triple M's Sean Goff, who spearheads the No Talk Day initiative on behalf of the Triple M Network, sat with Lifeline advocate for suicide prevention and awareness, Ian, who shares his mental health story, along with insights and advice for taking control and care of for your mental health.
Today, I'm wonderfully grateful to speak to you. So I guess what I wanted to find out is, you know, what it is you'd like to convey from your perspective about mental health and what message you'd like me and for Triple M listeners and people listening to Triple M around the country to take away from today.
Look, I think one of the biggest issues, is particularly when it comes to men's mental health, is the importance of actually reaching out and taking control. When you reach a point that suicide becomes a rational thought in your own mind, that's probably the point that you really, really need to seek help. But prevention is far better than cure, and establishing good, healthy relationships long before you reach crisis point is key to building resilience. You know, it's very clear in society nowadays, we've got a generation growing up now that is incredibly comfortable in talking about mental health issues. But at the same time, we have a reluctance to actually build upon those skills that we need to actually develop resilience beyond that, beyond just talk. You know, talk is fantastic, awareness is fantastic, but to build on positive mental health and to encourage people to understand that in times of crisis, if you haven't already done the work beforehand, it's going to be twice as hard to get through it. So, I mean, male suicide rates have always been high. They've particularly grown through since the 70s. There's been a increase in male rates versus female rates. And where we're at now, it does seem that subgroups are really important to understand. So communities such as the LGBTI community, veterans community, so on and so forth, where those percentages are really quite high within those communities, those subgroups, yes, positive conversations need to occur, positive engagement needs to occur, and mental health resilience needs to be encouraged.
Yeah.
No matter who you are, no matter how strong you think you are, we all face crisis. We all have hard times, and it's definitely okay to reach out and speak to someone. And it might not be the person you think is there for you. It might not be your best mate. It might not be the bloke in the corner that you speak to, the person behind the bar. There are many, many different ways of reaching out and getting help, you know. And if there is no right or wrong answer to this, you know, if you are talking, you are still moving.
Yep.
You know, so
what does crisis look like from your point of view? I guess different people would think about crisis in different ways. I think about it as the top of the spiral rather than the bottom of it. How do you define if someone is in crisis? What's your perspective?
I like to use the analogy of the old helter skelters from the old theme parks. You know, crisis is you actually on that ride on the way down. So you've got to a point where things have started to go out of control, which is you at the top of the slide. And at the bottom of the slide is the crash. Crisis is you going down that helter skelter without the mat to prevent the friction, without all the safety features and all the rest of it, is that spiral into chaos.
So you're saying it's the start as well. It's when you feel yourself starting to go, that's crisis?
Yeah. So you've got these points in your life where you reach these epiphany moments of life is not going the right way. My situation is becoming worse and worse and deteriorating. So crisis is the journey. It's not just a single moment. Crisis can be started from a single moment, a trauma event, a relationship breakdown, something along those lines. But your journey through crisis is just that. It is a journey. It is not a single moment.
That makes complete sense. Now, I'm aware you and I have just met, and this is a very intimate space that we are in.
Yep.
Do you mind taking me through some of your personal experiences?
No problem at all. So, look, my story is several years in the making, several decades in the making. Mm-hmm. realistically, the first time I thought about taking my own life, I was a young lad, barely in high school. I'd been the victim of sexual assault by a family friend, and it really did mess with my head. And at the same time, my biological father was beating my mother, they'd separated, and I was growing up around this whole, oh, well, like father, like son, what you've experienced, you know, you're going to do exactly the same. So I really was, I had this reinforcement of the stereotype of, I am going to grow up to be a wife-beating pedophile. That was, you know, pre-internet, pre-social media. That was the message that was being given to me at such a young age. So when I see it now, it really does, it burns me inside, because we haven't learned that negativity is not the way to promote positive mental health. That, you know, shaming people into changing behaviors, it doesn't work overly well. Yeah, you can use negative reinforcement as much to a certain extent, but positive reinforcement has so many more benefits. So that's sort of where we're at. But ultimately, I reached a point where I was convinced that I was going to be the source of pain and anger and hurt for someone else. And I just didn't want to be that person. So I took matters into my own hand. I couldn't see a way out of it because, there were no counselling services readily available for me. Yeah, there was a helpline, but I didn't have free and easy access to a phone because it was attached to the wall in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, so it got to a point where really the only thing I had left that I felt I had control over was my own life. And, as a young lad, that's a very grim place to be. So I took the steps, but for a quirk of fate, I was not, my plan didn't work. Or shall we say, you know, I don't want to use the term, I was unsuccessful in taking my own life, but...
I think my plan didn't work. I think sums it up beautifully.
But years later, I went through some more hardship. It wasn't something that I really didn't dwell on it much after the fact and after my grandfather discovered me and things like that. But years later, I reached another crisis point. My marriage broke down. My first marriage broke down, and I felt like crap. I really did. And a bitter custody battle ensued, and so on and so forth. But when you've gone from being a loving, caring father, and being able to see your kids every single morning when you wake up, to being told that you can't even see them every other weekend because you're not the person that the mother wants to be around anymore. It was soul crushing. It was soul destroying. And I reached that dark place again. Mm-hmm. And whilst it wasn't as bad as the first time, it was still fairly bad. And then I moved forward, a period of time. I hadn't got counselling. I hadn't done this. I hadn't done that. I hadn't reached out. And then I reached another dark moment where I was bullied at work. And again, I reached a dark point, but by this time I didn't want to reach out for professional reasons. It would destroy my career. It was all these other little things. But ultimately, I internalized so much to the point where it was debilitating for me, beyond anything I can ever really imagine nowadays. A few years later, I started really thinking about things, and a colleague of mine took his own life, and it really made me think. And it got to a stage where every Christmas I was going on leave, and Facebook would pop up, so-and-so has been found, so-and-so has been found, so-and-so has been found. And it felt like year after year after year, I had an old army mate would pop up on my feed as they've been found. The funeral service will be at this time. We have thoughts and with the family and all the rest of it. So,
is this a series of them you're describing here?
Yeah, just a series. Yeah, wow. It literally every Christmas period there was at least one, both from the British my time in the British Army and my time in the Australian Defence Force. Yeah. So 1 year, it just got to a point of, if I don't stand up and start talking about this, and I don't say, for Christ's sake, reach out, get help, I can't look at myself in the mirror and say I've done everything I can to help my friends. So I sort of started down this journey of actually doing things like that. My experience as a lived experience advocate and suicide prevention advocate has been a wonderful journey, one that I could never have imagined. You know, the 12, 13-year-old lad that, you know, came home from school one day on a darkened bus and was like, yep, I'm not seeing tomorrow, is a million miles away from the 46-year-old man you see standing here in the studio today, completing his second master's degree and having spent over 2.5 decades in the military between the Brits and the Aussies. I've got 3 kids. Unfortunately, I don't see one of them, but I've got a 2.5-year-old at home. I've got a 19-year-old at home. My middle child is 16 years old, and I would love to catch up with her and reconnect with her at some point. But my life is a million miles from where I was, and I put a lot of that down to right now finding the right people, feeling comfortable to talk to mates and not hiding away what I have here, but also being able to find the right counsellor. It's really important to find the right person to speak to. And there's so many times men will go in and they'll meet a counsellor, they'll have a couple of sessions with them, and then they won't feel that rapport, and they'll go away thinking that every single counsellor is the same as that one. Finding the right counsellor is like finding the right partner in life, the right sexual partner. You know, it might not be the person you think. It might not be whatever. You know, I've sat with many, many counsellors, many psychotherapists, many psychologists over the years. And there are some mental health professionals out there, don't get me wrong, absolutely wonderful human beings. But I would not want to sit down and go, right, this is the deep, dark place that I am in. But then again, I've met a few, and I'm going to refer to my favourite psychologist as my Wookiee, because many years ago, I went to Disneyland and we went to the Star Wars thing. We walked through and we were having a character meet and greet, and we met Chewbacca. And my kids were like, we have never seen you like that, because I walked in, I saw Chewie, and I just hugged Chewie like it was a giant teddy bear. And I tell you what, it was like I was a child again hugging this teddy bear. Now, at the beginning of the year, my family, my girls and my wife, we went on one of the Disney cruises and we did a Star Wars meet and greet again. There was Chewie there. And I stood in line, and as I'm getting closer and closer to the front, I'm starting to well up. Now, we just had to put our dog down of nearly 14 years, only about 2 weeks beforehand. And me being the stoic dad that I am, I had to be there for everybody else. I was there being that strong male figure, being what everybody, the family needed at that time. I took Nanook off and we said our goodbyes, and I played some bagpipe music because, you know, military, away we go. And as I walked up to the stage, I said to my eldest daughter, I said, look, can you just stand back for a little bit? And I had my phone in my hand with a picture of my dog. And I walked up and I called the Chewbacca and the girl playing Rey. And I said, look, my dog passed away a couple of weeks ago. I can't break down in front of my family when it happened. But can I just hug Wookiee? Can I just hug you like, you know, like a child? And we were, there was this look on Ray's face, because obviously the Chewie character, you can't see.
Yeah.
But he leant forward and everybody in the room went silent. And you could just hear this gentle sob as I've got my head buried in this Wookiee's shoulder, bawling like a little infant for about a minute or so. Everybody in that room knew exactly what they were watching. And as I pulled away and I said thank you, the arms came around me And I turned around and the whole room was just sat there, stood there looking at me. And it was just this wonderful moment where you could see all the other men in the room were just like, that is strong, positive masculinity. That is what I wish I could be like in some, yeah. So I call my current confidant, counselor, my Wookie, because she is someone that I feel so comfortable with. I know I can walk into her when I'm having a really tough time and, you know, go back when things get a bit too tough, and I can be vulnerable around her. So I encourage everybody, every man to find his Wookie, every man to find his Chewy and feel comfortable in that moment to be vulnerable. It takes a hell of a lot of balls to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I love that story, Ian. I think, and thank you for sharing it. It sounds like something you obviously continue to deal with, but that you've been able to find a way to deal with. You're a force of nature, mate. and we put our dog down last year after 17 years, and that is, I was a mess, and that was you can't explain to somebody what that's like until they experience it themselves.
Yeah, look, loss in all its forms is terrible. You know, and beloved family pets, no matter what anybody says, they're not just a pet, they're a family member.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. If you're going all in with them, they are.
Oh, yeah.
So you're a 12, 13-year-old, I think you were saying, when you were thinking about taking your own life.
Mm-hmm.
You're charting your own course. You've decided to take steps. What were they? What were the steps you took to start to really take charge of your mental health and your mental well-being?
I think the first step was actually admitting to myself that I wasn't traveling as well as I thought I was.
Yep.
Young men have a bravado about them, regardless of whether they suffer from anxiety, imposter syndrome, insert mental health issue here. There is a inherent bravado within young men particularly, and within most youngsters full stop, that is there as an underlying thing. But for me, it was actually admitting to myself that things were not tracking well and that I couldn't control this by myself. So getting to a point where I could actually admit to myself what was going on was the first step. You know, you can enter a crisis spiral at any point in your life. And so realizing that you were at the threshold of one many times, you know, on an almost weekly basis is a horrible thing, but it does take a lot of courage to look inside and see what is going on with yourself and see what is going on with the world around you, you know. And you can't control everything around you. So often we look at things and we go, right, can I actually control that person's reaction? Can I control what is going on in global events, you know? So having these existential crises that you can do absolutely nothing about was, you know, one of those big things in my life. You know, can I control other people and how they interact with me? No, but I can control how I interact with other people and how I react to other people. Yeah, and more importantly, I can control how I can react to myself. But then having the maturity to say, I don't have all the skills to do this, is the next step, you know. So knowing yourself and admitting it to yourself that you're at the start of a crisis spiral, mm-hmm. and then going, you know what, I need additional skills here and I don't have them. You know, whether it be counsellors, whether it be friends, whether it be colleagues, you know, sharing the burden half the time, just talking, relieves so much pressure, you know. But so many young men nowadays struggle to share because they've seen so many of their mates burn, you know. But they've shared, they've reached out and they've shared, and then all of a sudden their life, they part of council culture, they get destroyed for it. So we're telling, on one hand, we're telling, yeah, let's do this, yeah, get out there, talk, be there. And on another hand, the own words that you're using, the vulnerability you're showing, is getting used against you. But it's really quite sad. But reaching out and finding that right person and starting with your immediate friends, starting with those people is the best place to start. You know, it may be that they turn around and go, dude, you need help. Mm-hmm. You need professional help. This is beyond my pay grade. I cannot help you here, but let me help you find the person that can. You know, so don't be afraid that if someone comes to, you know, you as an individual, if you hear these friend come to you and say, hey, look, I'm struggling, you don't have to provide the answers. It's not you that has to counsel them, but you can help them on their journey. You know, you can find that moment where they're ready to listen, they're reaching out, they're starting that conversation, and you're like, right, let's see if we can get you in with someone, okay? And they're, from there, they can become a support person. Mm. You know, how did your appointment go today? Oh, have you seen your Wookiee lately? And that sort of stuff. You know, so they can check in, you know, and check in with the progress. So yeah, there's multiple steps to it, but you know, for me it was admitting that I had a problem.
Yep.
Then admitting that I didn't have the skills.
Right. And what are the things that have worked well for you over your journey to help you with your mental health and look after your own mental well-being?
I've done lots of things. Physical activity is probably one of the best ones I can recommend, and I can say that hand on heart. Yeah, everybody knows about the chemical benefits of exercising, the physical benefits of exercising, but more so, it's a period of time where you're just doing something for yourself. Now, I've done journaling as well. I did a bit of writing to get some of the stuff out of my head. I've done study, you know, both from an academic perspective and just for sheer shits and giggles. But one of the things that I really am enjoying at the moment is I have a fish tank. So we bought a fish tank recently, you know, just before our dog passed away. And I look after my fish and I film my fish and put up some social media posts. But slowing life down to a deliberate crawl is one really good way of doing things. I mean, I use binaural beats, you know, sound therapy type stuff as well. But yeah, look, I mean, there's so many things that you can do out there and so many things that I've done over the years. You know, I've taken it to extremes of, I've run marathons, I've jumped out of planes at 14,000 feet. I've done ocean races, even walked around Melbourne in the middle of the night. But I think a lot of those things, you need to find what is right for you at that time in your life and then dedicate time to it. Being able to dedicate time to yourself is an important thing. Now, one of the things you will hear is the term self-care. Self-care is important, but it's not selfish care. I do a lot of self-care by helping other people. So find out what works for you. Find out if there is a way to help other people, you know. Just looking after yourself and being that person that's so into themselves creates a whole other barrier to progress. But yeah, I think there's so many things you can do, but yeah.
That's some wonderful insights there and examples. Can you talk a little bit about the behaviours and the things that didn't serve you very well?
Alcohol. Don't get me wrong, I love a good drink. I will drink ouzo, scotch, whiskey, you name it, I will drink it if it has an alcohol content as a general rule. But self-medication does not work. It is like putting oil on the helter-skelter of a chaos spiral, and it just exacerbates everything. For me, alcohol was one of those things that really didn't help the situation. Add to that, yeah, the good old-fashioned inside your own head, gaslighting yourself and convincing yourself that you are the problem and that if only you weren't here really doesn't help either. But yeah, look, if I can recommend anything to anybody to avoid, the first thing I would say is just limit your alcohol intake. And if you're getting to that really dark place, perhaps think about just laying off the grog for a few weeks. Some people say it's easier said than done. Other people say it's just easy, full stop. But it's more about breaking that habit of hiding behind a bottle rather than taking the positive steps. You know, substitute going for a beer or having a drink with going for a walk. Yeah, walk to the pub and then walk past the pub. And whatever time you would take drinking the beer in the pub, take that time and walk past the pub and then come back. You know, form that habit of being able to walk past something, mm-hmm. Walk past your problems, go above and beyond, you know, be like the SAS on selection, be the happy wanderer, go forth explore, okay? Because if you explore, you can find a new way to do things.
What first step did you take to get some help?
Internally was understanding that I needed help. Physically was actually speaking to my wife.
Yep.
Sitting there and saying, look, I need a little bit of extra help here. I think there's something I need to talk and I don't want to burden you with it. But this is a journey that we're both going to be on, you know, if you're up for it. And by God, she was up for it. She's been a rock. She's an absolutely wonderful woman. And I love it a bit. But yeah, it was, for me, that first step to actually get help was to actually speak to a loved one. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, find the right way to move forward and find the right counselor.
Any obstacles, setbacks for you sort of through your, are there any that stick out of, you know, because it's kind of, it can be a bit like snakes and ladders looking after you, managing mental health?
Look, I think the biggest barrier was me. I'm just going to say that right here, right now. The biggest barrier was me. So many concerns that, you know, if people find out, what will they say? If my ex-wife finds out, what will she do? All these things, you know, I became so worried about how could me seeking help be used against me. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it's this very similar situation for a lot of men nowadays, is how can me seeking help be used against me? It's a huge barrier. Another thing that is going to sound really strange is there is no such thing as a ubiquitous safe space. Everybody says, oh, this is a safe space. Well, if it's a safe place for that person, then it's not a safe place for this person. They're two very different people, you know? So yeah, there is no such thing. There are attempts to be ubiquitous. There are attempts to be wonderfully safe spaces. But not everybody feels safe in the same space, you know, and that's another barrier. Having almost too much positivity, too much leaning forward and going, hey, look, you know, this is a safe space. Everyone should feel safe here. Well, by the fact you're saying that, I'm a little bit on edge here. So with that acknowledgement, you have to take a leap of faith. That is a big factor. You have all these barriers that are there. For me, it was, what could be used against me? Is there any professional ramifications from this? Are people going to think I'm weak? And the complete opposite is true. You know, the barriers that were there are crumbled in my wake. The people that I was worried would see me as weak turn around and say, God, I wish I had your balls. Mm. You know, once you're over them, once you pass that barrier, once you have that courage just to take that leap and you look back and you go, why the was that an issue for me? The first time I stood up in public and I said, my name is Ian Carter and I'm a suicide survivor, I was petrified. I was shaking, I was sweating, but almost immediately afterwards, I had people coming up, patting me on the back. I had, oh, I'd like you to meet so-and-so. They're going through depression at the moment. They've been trying to find a way to actually come out about this and talk to everybody here. Would you walk up onto stage with him so he can do that? So that one moment of courage, that one moment of faith led to someone else being able to move forward in their journey.
Brilliant.
And it just, it's like a snowball. You know, you just, that one thing, that one moment can start so much positivity in the world.
You just don't realise what impact you can have, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Any advice, what advice would you give to somebody, Ian, who is worried about somebody who might be sort of approaching crisis or is in crisis mentally?
Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to ask the hard question, because if you don't ask the hard question now, you will regret not asking it in the future. And if someone asks you the hard question, take it as a sign of love and respect. Don't get the shits with them just because they asked you if you're okay. All right. It's a natural defensive reaction to say, oh, you know, no, I'm fine. No worries. You know, and go off and grumble. If someone has reached out to you and go, hey, how are you doing? I've noticed you're a little bit, you know, different at the moment. You're a little bit stressed. You're a little bit strained. Is everything okay? Do you want to talk? Is there someone I can help you get to talk to? If someone has got that much love and respect for you that they have reached out and asked you that question, do not be afraid to say, tell the truth. You know, you may be perfectly fine. You just may be a grumpy bastard. It's, you know, life is life. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, don't think ill of them because they've shown you enough love and care and respect to do that very hard thing.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, having the courage to just ask that question, it takes a lot. It really does.
Let's flip that coin in somebody who is approaching crisis point or is at a point where, you know, they feel crap, they don't really know why. What advice might you give them?
Look, I think the first thing I would say is find someone you trust and just say, hey, I'm not having a good time at the moment. Yeah? You don't have to be suicidal to reach out for help.
No.
You know, prevention is better than cure. Pre-COVID, there was a lot of people going out in clubs. You know, the social aspect of life was so much more. Through COVID, we became fairly insular, you know, and we're still trying to find a way back from that. Life went from being interactions face-to-face to over social media and via phones, you know, and FaceTime and things like that. So having the courage to actually reach out and speak to someone, it's tough. It's tough, but do it. Do it, because if my plan had worked, I would not be here today.
Mm.
And I know that just through doing things like this, I've saved lives and I've helped. I've helped people take that step. So you never know where your future is going to take you.
Mm.
You know, so have the courage to be there for your future.
It's so true. The stuff you're doing is really helping save lives. And it's been a real honour to spend some time with you today. And I'm incredibly grateful for your honesty and your trust. I really appreciate that, for you sharing your story with us for Triple M Show Talk.
Thank you very much for inviting us along, and thank you very much for doing this. It's an absolutely wonderful thing. You know, and Triple M doing this No Talk Day. It's fantastic. You know, never underestimate the strength of just sitting with someone and not talking.
Yeah.
Just being there and being present really does help.
If this podcast has brought up emotions that feel hard to manage right now, remember it's perfectly okay to reach out for support. If you find it tough to talk to a mate about what's going on, you can reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au/talk.